Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, good evening. We're going to begin while the waiters are still bringing the last of the coffee and the dessert. I encourage them to keep on with their important labors. I'd like to welcome you to Indianapolis and to this regional meeting of the Philadelphia Society and the topic, The Legacy of Pierre F. Goodrich. Pierre Goodrich was an Indianapolis businessman. Grew up in Winchester, Indiana, over near the Ohio line, and thought long and hard about what it meant to be free men and women, and thought about the legacy he wanted to leave behind for a long, long time, and which was finally incorporated into the Liberty Fund, founded in 1960 for what Pierre Goodrich called to pursue the study of the ideal of a society of free and responsible individuals. Now, this conference is not going to be about Pierre Goodrich. It's not going to be about his own writing and thinking, but it is going to be an opportunity to think about some of the ideas and principles that he thought were important if we were going to live as free human beings. I think we have put together really a quite spectacular program of some very interesting people giving talks on themes that would have mattered to Pierre Goodrich. At luncheon tomorrow, we will hear from Dane Starbuck, who has been working on a biography of Pierre Goodrich for quite a long time. I've read most of it, all that was written at the time, and it's a very good piece. This particular subject and this particular place was a topic that was very dear to our late Secretary Don Lipset. He had been wanting to come to Indianapolis for a regional meeting of the Philadelphia Society for a long time. He'd been hoping that we could do one on the legacy of Pierre Goodrich. And really, this meeting is one that Don and Julie Flick put together before Don's death. And it's a very great pleasure to have you all here carrying out this heartfelt wish of Don's that had gone on for many years, in which I'd had the pleasure of talking to him about over the course of some time. We thought that because of his recent passing, that we would begin with a tribute to Don Lipset. And we have six members of the Philadelphia Society who are going to say a few words. I'm just going to mention them all now, and then they will come up one by one. All of them, I believe, spoke at Don's memorial service 2 or 3 weeks ago in Woodburn, Indiana. And they're all known to you. Ken Tribb, Ed Fulner, John Ryan, Barbara Vonderheit, Bill Campbell, and Stan Evans.
To say that Don Lipset was one in a million would be to considerably understate the odds. God only made one Commodore Lipset. And the three aspects of that unique personality that I would like to touch upon were sense of humor, his generosity of spirit, and that long memory of his. Everyone here knows well how much Don loved to tease and to be teased. Even serious business was conducted with a considerable dollop of joshing. It was as if Don couldn't bear to treat an abstract business matter without, through humor, reminding you that his personal relationship was more encompassing than the narrow issue at hand. One way that Don used to recall us to our humanity with some regularity was nicknames. Everyone had a nickname. The 1976 Nobel laureate in economics was Uncle Milty. Eric Ritter von Kunell-Kladin was simply the world's foremost authority. And who else in the conservative movement called the president of the Heritage Foundation Eddie? For that matter, who else in the conservative movement had a dog named Edwin J. Fulner, Jr.? To Don, I was Colonel, I suppose because I'm from South Carolina, except when he wrote letters to me, and then I was Colonel T.K. Cribb, Confederate States of America, retired. A receptionist at the White House noticed this and called it to the attention of the protocol people. Well, the oversight was corrected immediately, And for weeks, the middle place cards at the meetings would say Colonel Crib. Much to my bewilderment. And when we finally figured out what was going on, Don was, of course, much amused that he had caused this trouble. Don and I had a good deal of Philadelphia Society business over 20 or 25 years. But every second telephone call from him was about someone in difficulty, with Don, as usual, organizing the rescue party. A scholar who could attend his first national meeting if only we could scare up a lecture or two. A down-on-his-luck movement veteran who needed a little networking before he landed his next job. The brilliant young writer who could prosper with an introduction to just the right publisher. You've all had calls like that from Don Lipset. So how do we recognize that, reconcile that sense of humor and that generosity of spirit with another of Don's unique traits, that long memory? With some, remembering wrongs, keeping score is done in a spirit of revenge. With Don, how you behave towards your fellow man was a character issue that he attended to. And if you behave badly, you were not the kind of person that Don wanted in the community of souls known as the Philadelphia Society. Don had the softest heart in town when anyone was in trouble, but he was stern when it came to the integrity of the Philadelphia Society. There are those here that go back to the beginning of the Philadelphia Society, and I won't presume to characterize its importance in this company. Let me just say that when I was invited to join as a young man on a Saturday in Chicago in 1972, I remember, I felt as if I were being welcomed in as a full-fledged member of a conservative movement by the people who had founded it, by men and women who had dedicated their lives to the pursuit and nurture and vindication of human freedom. Two people put their arms around my shoulder that morning. One was Ed Foner, the perpetual treasurer, and one was the permanent secretary, Don Lipset. Many young people have been welcomed into the movement with just that gesture over the years, in a symbolic embrace and a continuum that exists to this moment. If you were lucky, the third person you met was Norma, Don's wife. It took two people to run the Philadelphia Society, and everyone who attended from 1964 until very recent days knew that. Norma is with us tonight. We're honored to have her in our presence. Don Lipset did not commit his philosophy of life to writing, except for certain cryptic references in the meetings of the Invisible Hand Society. But by creating an institution that has nurtured generations of conservative leadership, he has left behind a legacy as enduring as the books with which he surrounded himself in North Adams. Burke said that there was a great chain of being that connects the dead, the living, and the yet unborn. In the chain that connects the best that has been thought and said with the rising generation of conservative scholars, Don Lipset's Philadelphia Society has been a strong link, small perhaps, but by definition essential if the chain is to hold. Let us honor Don's memory by ensuring that his beloved Philadelphia Society remains vital into the new millennium. In the last 2 years, we've lost some of the giants of the conservative revival, notably including two past presidents of this society, M.E. Bradford, Russell Kirk. Dr. Kirk very much liked Father Martin Darcy's image of heaven as a place where all things good in life are immediately present, not symbolically, but in the full richness as we experience them in life, certainly including our circle of friends. Let us hope that each of us in good time is welcomed into that circle, and don't be surprised if at the first meeting, there's a solitary figure sitting at the back of the room, a little to one side, puffing away at his pipe. Bradford and Kirk will have the speaking parts, but you can bet that Don Lipset organized the meeting.
It's impossible to capture 35 years of a relationship. 35 years with Don, first as an advisor when I was an undergraduate and a graduate student, and he was the Midwestern field director based here in Indianapolis, and later the national field director of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. Later, Don is a colleague both in the Philadelphia Society and now for more than 15 years at Heritage, where he made countless trips from North Adams, always with about 18 pounds of unread newspapers and miscellaneous material that he tried to pawn off on me on the rides in and out. But it's impossible to capture that in my allotted time, so I'm just going to share a few vignettes with you. When we had word of Don's passing, I put it on our email system at Heritage, and about an hour later, I ran into Ed Meese in the hallway, and he had that famous twinkle in his eye that all of you have known Ed over the years have seen. And Ed said to me, you know, for about 9 years, I think I was probably Don Lipsett's best unpaid Adam Smith necktie salesman. Or Byron Lamb, who was very helpful to us when we were arranging the memorial service in Woodburn, because he lives in Fort Wayne. He told me when we were talking 2.5 weeks ago, working out some of the details, he mentioned his first encounter with Don. It was, in fact, at a Philadelphia Society meeting. And he said, the first time I met Don, he accused me of having been a student of Ben Rogge. He said, I don't know how he knew that, but it seemed that Don knew everything about everybody in the conservative movement. Joe Morris, longtime member of our society, reminds us all that Don, like everyone's favorite uncle, and I quote from a letter that he sent me, treated us like an adult when everyone else was still seeing us as a kid. He was the one who was a living connection with a good but disappearing past. Each of us who've known Don over the years have personal memories we could all recall. Trips together, meals shared, anecdotes exchanged, and sitting with Don, as Ken said, inevitably puffing on his pipe while he was revising yet another edition of his, quote, universally applicable but not widely known laws, of which there are countless permutations and variations. One of his friends of more than 35 years wrote me when he heard the news. He said, when we finally complete the work of downsizing our national government, cutting our oppressive taxes, eliminating our national debt, and restoring the religious and moral values upon which the preservation of a free society depends, there may be no monument erected in Washington to recognize Don's role. But in the hearts of all who knew him through the years, Don Lipsett will endure forever. That's from a charter member of our Philadelphia Society, longtime Illinois Congressman Phil Crane. The last time Linda and I were with Don was just 3 weeks before he passed away, when he was on his regular monthly visit to Washington. We had a nice dinner in Old Town. Our daughter Emily joined us, and this was after Don and I had spent a long day exchanging ideas about investment policies and political strategy and great items of state. But Emily, who's now 22, had known Uncle Don all her life. And it was that kind of night that Linda and I were saying when we were in Woodburn that we really want to remember about Don, because the next day, well, about a couple weeks after, Emily and Don shared something else in common, not necessarily the most desirable of traits from my perspective, but they were both night people. Emily routinely comes in, turns the house alarm off about 3:30 a.m., at which point wakes us up in the middle of the night. Of course, I've got to get up at 5:30 or 6, and she's ready to go for another couple hours and ready to regale us with her tales. But anyway, because Emily's a night person, she wasn't awake that Monday morning 3 weeks ago when Norma called me with the sad news. Later on about noontime, she called me at the office, and she said, Dad, I know you're really going to miss Uncle Don, but I want you to know that Mom and EJ and I are going to miss him a lot, too. I think just about all of us are going to miss Uncle Don because he touched so many of us in so many different ways. It's just one way how Don impacted on the lives of so many different people. T.V. Smith, who wrote one of the better biographies of James Madison, once said something that I think is profoundly relevant to Don Lipset about Madison. He said, "For him, the cause was everything, the credit expendable." Tonight and always, we salute Don Lipset, friend, counselor, and the unsung hero of the modern conservative movement. Thank you.
I'm about as close to a politician as where anybody from Philadelphia can get. And let me tell you, from a politician's point of view, that we are where we are because of Don Lipset. If it was not that, if he were not had not been there, if he had not existed, if he had been the type of incredible. And I think still it is. We wouldn't be where we are right now. Thank you. And I'm not going to detail that. I'm just going to make it a statement of fact. And those of you who don't realize it will realize it later when you get to be wiser. It didn't seem possible that we could be having a party, an evening, without having Lipset with us. I still look for him, and I dare say other people do too. But it's something else. We're going to win. The things that the philosophies which are being discussed and fought and everything Congress now are going to pass, and they better be the right thing because if that's the way it's going to be from now on. And I, for one, think it's a great. I had no idea I was going to see this the latter part of my life, and I'll miss him every minute day he's gone. Thank you.
Don Lipset had the capacity to change lives. It was an unobtrusive gift, one of piecing together relationships and ideas. He cemented them together with a unique blend of conviction, humor, and loyal friendship. I first met Don fresh out of university as I joined the staff of Hillsdale College some 22 years ago. It was in their home in North Adams that Don and Norma introduced me to their menagerie of wounded wildlife, the delights of late-night conversations in high spirits and smoke-filled parlors, and the conservative movement in person. They knew everyone, it seemed, and they were generous in sharing their friends with me. Many of them have become my friends, too, friends for life. What a difference one life makes. Who will ever know how many threads of the conservative movement woven into the tapestry have passed through the hands of Don Lipset? Throughout his lifetime, papers, writers, speakers, students, books, and jotted notes were constantly being reshuffled in new configurations. His filing system may have been unconventional, but the results were fertile. Don knew all the greats of the conservative movement. But what was most remarkable about him was his personal loyalty to an utterly diverse group of people. He gave life to the notion of a community of souls bound to one another. Indeed, he bound them together. He was a true and loyal friend to many people who otherwise jostled at one another's intellectual angularities. Don was always willing to be the intermediary and let others receive the applause. We labored together as midwives for a variety of conferences, papers, books. We shared travels in the Chateau country of the Loire Valley in France together with Narma. I had many opportunities to enjoy Don's whimsical humor and his nurturing nature. I speak as one of the beneficiaries of his warm-heartedness. It was through Don and Norma that I met many of you here, and countless others, people who have shaped my life indelibly. He's done the same for more people than we may possibly imagine. When I learned last year of his struggle for his health, I wrote to him. It was a moment that the inner prompting to respond was timely. I told him that I knew of his struggle and that I was with him in spirit. I told him that I was grateful for his friendship. And I told him that he had planted countless seeds of good in more lives than he could begin to imagine, and it would yield much fruit. And I told him that I loved him. I'm glad that I was able to tell him that as a friend. I pray for him now that he may meet his Savior and rest in peace. I pray for Norma that our love may enfold her like a cloak. And I pray that the traces of Don's life in our souls may bear much fruit now and ever.
It is fitting that the first meeting of the Philadelphia Society after the death of Don Lipset should be in Indianapolis. It was in Naptown that Don did some of his best work for ISI, the Intercollegiate Society of Individualists, as it was then known. He was the Midwestern director of ISI at that time and devoted tireless hours to visiting campuses and cultivating student clubs. I first got to know Don through my father, Al Campbell, who was Pierre Goodrich's law partner in the firm of Goodrich, Campbell, and Warren. But my relationship with Don deepened as the years went on. My wife, Helen, another Hoosier from Shortridge High School, had known Norma Huron and introduced her to Don. Our memories of Don and Norma cover many wonderful trips and visits, Charlottesville, Virginia, Europe, and yes, we even got Don to go to the beach in Florida with us. He would amble down with his pipe, National Review, Time Magazine, the Wall Street Journal, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, cavort in the water for about 5 minutes, and go back up. But he had done the beach, and he could not be faulted. Well, what kind of a man was Don? Is there anything about being a Hoosier which could draw together such disparate men as Don and Pierre Goodrich? Peter Viereck states in the opening of his 1956 book, The Unadjusted Man, A New Hero for Americans, quote, "The fight is for the private life. Abstract ideologies are Saharas. The overadjusted man knows only the public life," end quote. But neither Don nor Pierre could be accused of being over-adjusted men. They were unadjusted men, devoted to the cause of liberty. They fought this battle often together, even where their strategies differed. In fact, the famous, I'm not quite sure if it was 1959 or 1960, Stan Evans may have to illuminate us on this, the Brown County meeting of the Indiana Conservative Club had for its speakers Milton Friedman, Frank Meyer, and Richard Weaver. Stan Evans, we have tapes of this too, I believe. Stan Evans opened up the meeting, according to the schedule, at least, at 9:30 with "What We Hope to Accomplish." It is doubtful that the meeting actually started at 9:30. It is legendary that Pierre Goodrich was very upset with Don because the meetings did not start on time. all of those of you who have attended the Liberty functions know that that's a very important part of the ritual. Don, Frank Meyer, and probably Stan Evans the night before had indulged their nocturnal habits. Frank Meyer's nocturnal habits were legendary. A sort of a token of this, recently when I called Stan to remind him of the Indianapolis meeting, I called him at 6:30 p.m. in Washington, which I guess is relatively nocturnal by Washington standards. He was not only there in his office, but he answered the phone himself, personally. I was reminded by Jameson Campaign at the memorial service for Don in Woodburn of one of Don's best paper organizations, the Nicodemus Society. The society was for night people because Nicodemus came by night. Sadly, I must also report that my father was a casualty in the war dedicated to making Don Lipset a respectable middle-class person. I think he knew in his heart of hearts that the cause was a hopeless one. Don always used to sign his letters to my dad as your obedient servant. Servant, yes. Obedient, no. Dad usually referred to Don as the Commodore, but on one occasion he signed his letter to Don, your disobedient servant. It is hard to remember, for example, that Don was once a stockbroker, supposed to hold regular hours. Imagine the manager of the Payne Weber office trying to figure out a broker who might amble in when the market was about ready to close. Don once admitted to my dad that instead of doing his, quote, overdue Payne Weber homework one Saturday night, he was working on a, quote, list for the ISI seminar. First things first for Don. Don even went so far as to opine to my father in a letter that, quote, I think Pierre should hire me to help him with the Liberty Fund and his other foundations, but haven't heard anything from him. This was in 1967. What if Pierre Goodrich had hired Don Lipset? About all we can say in true Adam Smithian fashion is that there would have been an end which was no part of their intention. As it was, both went their separate ways, creating unique institutions which have stood the test of time and have never wavered from the original intent of their founders. As Don would have put it, the only persons interested in living constitutions and vague penumbras were probably communists. He would have wanted to be remembered as a loyal Hoosier, the founder of the Philadelphia Society, and a good American. Thank you.
When the six people appearing before you now spoke at the memorial service in Woodburn, I began by recalling a joke that is of Washington provenance that will mean a lot to people like Ed Fulner and Ken Cribb and John Ryan and many others in this room, about a high official in the Reagan White House, who shall remain nameless, except I will say that it was neither Ronald Reagan nor Ed Meese, into whose office I was once shown, according to the way I tell the joke. And I looked on the wall behind his desk, and he had a sign which said, "There is no limit to the amount of credit you can take if you don't care whether anything is accomplished." I think Jim Heinisch knows who that official was. Actually, it could have been one of several. The true saying, of course, is the other way around. And no one exemplified that true saying better than Don Lipset. He didn't care about getting credit, but cared a great deal about what could be accomplished. Neither swerving from the path of true conviction nor seeking publicity for himself, Don was an authentic founder. He founded things, kept them going, built them up. The Beer and Pizza Marching Society here in Indianapolis and the Conservative Club here. Countless ISI chapters across the Middle West. The Philadelphia Society, of course, as we all know. Tirelessly working to bring conservatives together, organizing meetings, providing books and pamphlets, Don was a kind of cross between Sam Adams and Saul Hurock, laying the predicate for the long work of conservative revival that has transformed the politics of our country. When the true history of our time is written, Don's life and labor will be interwoven with its fabric, far more so than many others whose fleeting fame is greater. Also, as you all know, he was the best of friends. Thinking back on more than 40 years, rooming together with Vic Milione when we were kids but didn't know it and thought that we could change the world, working here in Indianapolis for many years, traveling endless miles to campus meetings on these Midwestern highways. I can't remember a crossword between us. Rather, I recall the good times and the good things, standing up as his best man when he married Norma, the Brown County seminars with Weaver and Meyer and Friedman, which was a pretty good lineup. Meetings with John Ryan and Don Cope and Al Campbell and Joe Root and Bob Kroll and Tim Wheeler and Fred Mann and so many others in this room, and many, many other great and good friends here in Indiana. Basketball games at IU, for Don, among his other noble qualities, was a devoted Hoosier. All this and much more do we remember. The work Don did lives on, as long as the principles he defended still have vitality in our republic. Ed mentioned the quote of the remark of Phil Crane that there would be no monument for Don, and that's true in the physical sense. But if you would see his monument, look around you. Not only in this room, but at every gathering of conservatives that occurs across the nation. Don could surely say with the apostle, I fought a good fight, I finished my course, I have kept the faith. May all of us who cherish his example be able, when our time has come, to say the same.